Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of London. I'd like to invite you to attend one of our worship services. We meet each Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. for the Divine Service. We also meet Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. for Vespers. The first Sunday of each month at 3 p.m. we meet in Raynham, Kent, down in the Medway Towns on Salisbury Avenue. We do that at 3 p.m. and again would invite you, if you live anywhere near there, to come join us. Pastor Wade Bellisbach and myself work with the saints in East Kilbride at St. Columba Lutheran Church. We also do some work in Edinburgh with an Edinburgh mission. St. Columba meets each Sunday morning at 11 a.m., so encourage you to join them. And if you're interested in the Edinburgh mission, please contact us through Lutheran Radio, and we'll be happy to give you more details. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio. For without your prayers, without your gifts, we wouldn't be able to carry on this ministry, and we are deeply grateful to you for your prayers and for your gifts. Today, you've already heard his name mentioned, Pastor Wade Bellisbach. We've invited him to come and speak to us because he's a PhD student at the University of St. Andrews, and we're going to talk to him about the research that he's doing. Pastor Bellisbach, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And you're currently doing your research at St. Andrews, and you're doing it on the theology of beauty, a topic, quite frankly, I must confess, I'm not altogether familiar with. So I suppose, what is this topic all about, and why did you choose St. Andrews?
Yeah, right. So I guess generally it's the theology of beauty, even though that's probably not my specific area. I'll answer the second part of the question because that'll make sense of why it's not the specific area. So at St. Andrews, they have a specific institute devoted to, I think it's theology, imagination, and the arts. So it's a broad... broad institute. You could probably really research anything and classify it as that, given the title. And I suppose generally what people are doing in that institute is thinking about what theology has to contribute to the topic of beauty and what the topic of beauty has to contribute to theology. Now, the trouble with that is, well, what is theology and what is beauty, right? And so for those of us who are in the church or those of us who are theologians, we have some probably more narrow or better definitions of that. But beauty is a really hard thing to nail down, right? Is it art or is it imagination? Is it something else? So is it completely subjective? Is it in the eye of the beholder? Or is it actually objective, as in there are some things that truly are beautiful and some things that aren't, as in if they're not, they're ugly, you know? And how does that big question relate to the other big question of theology? So lots of people do different things in the Institute, and they tend to focus on different areas. So a lot of times people will focus in, say, more on the imagination. So they'll think conceptually about beauty, or they'll think more specifically. They'll do something with the art. So they'll pick a particular artist or an artistic movement and say, what really was going on here? What are these artists up to? Why are they doing things in this way? And what does that say about the world? And maybe even more than that, what does it say somewhat about God or something transcendent or spiritual? Some people try to combine it both. Some people get in trouble of just spending more time talking about, you know, theology and never getting around to talking about the arts, or talking about the arts and never getting around to theology. So that's all to say, because they're such big topics, it's a really, really interesting and open area to be in. So that's what drew me into St. Andrews, is that particular research institute. But it wasn't just that was the topic that was going on, that it was more so that this was a long kind of interest that I've had. So I started with an interest in beauty, partially back in college days when you're having conversations over the table or with friends or with really anybody, and thinking, you know, when you know you're wanting to do some kind of ministry in the church or serve the church, you kind of begin to think about how you do that, right? And a lot of times college kids are quite eager to think about giving a good witness to the faith, right? Which is a good thing. We should encourage that kind of, you know, concern. And so I became interested in apologetics, like a lot of pre-sem kids do in those days. But what I wanted to think more about was areas of apologetics in Lutheranism that aren't often maybe discussed. So a lot of times when people engage in apologetics, they'll engage in different kinds of philosophical thinking, right? Or they might try to give particular arguments, from history about how we could think about God and why religion is a plausible sort of thing, and especially Christianity. But I was more curious, as you can tell right now from this whole conversation about art and beauty, partially because I realized how important that was in people's lives, whether or not they realized it. And what I mean by that is how often people will make arguments about things or make big decisions about their lives or have frames about thinking about what they want to do with their lives, and they think about it from aesthetic terms, or they'll think about it from imaginative terms, right? So in college I was starting to kind of think about that. And it was also just a personal interest. Long before I considered pastoral ministry, I was really interested in the arts and thought about being an architect, and had always found a sort of home in the arts and wanted to combine that with theology, and knew that as Lutherans we actually do have a pretty good history with that.
So have you focused in on a particular section of the arts, or is yours fairly general?
No, so it is a particular area, but it's definitely from the area of systematics. So in theology, you know, systematics is trying to give a kind of conceptual frame on things that we talk about God, right? So if we're familiar with that, you know, a lot of times systematics says, here's the doctrine of God, or here's the doctrine of creation, or here's the doctrine of salvation, right? We try to give a good explanation and think conceptually about that. So that's what I'm doing here with theology and the arts, is it's from systematics, right? So I'm not doing a kind of project about what does the Bible per se say about beauty or art. I mean, whenever you're doing theology, you have to take seriously the Bible, of course, right? But my particular area is looking at what actually is an artist. Can we make any sense of that? And from our Lutheran frame, we often talk about anthropology or people or who they are according to vocation. So I narrowed it in more and say, what is the vocation of an artist? Do artists actually have callings? And that was twofold. That's partially because a lot of, you know, our Lutheran theology thinks about people through vocational terms, and thinks about how God is upholding, sustaining, or preserving the world, his creation, through people and through the callings he has for them and how they respond to them. But the other side, too, is if you talk to a lot of artists, they'll use that language as well. They'll talk about their calling to do something, right? Or they'll use kind of vague spiritual or transcendent language. And I realize that might be a happy union, is to put the two together and see what could come of that, as in, why do artists feel the need to talk in that language, right? And what could the church maybe provide for them to think about their own kind of work? And so generally I'm looking at that kind of question, and then I'm also looking at that kind of question from what Lutheran theology, what kind of tools it can offer. A lot of different, you know, denominations or other theologies could come up with some answers to that, but I think we've got a pretty strong background in vocation, so I thought, this will be a good way forward.
It strikes me that there are a number of Christians who would go, well, why bother? You know, there are some who would say, you know, we shouldn't have any, say, statues, so that gets rid of that bit of art. And there are some who say, well, we're not real keen on music, so that gets rid of that art and a bit of arts. And some, well, paintings, that's idolatry, or, you know, let's get rid of that bit of art. So how would you respond perhaps to those folks who say, well, that's just all breaking the second commandment?
Yes, no, that's right. That's a good question. In the sense that that's the tricky part about art, is because what's the purpose of art anyway, right? I think the response that the church can give to this is also a response to people to think once again about how they actually live their lives. And so what I mean by that, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about my interest in this whole topic to begin with, is that we can say, yeah, you know, I'm not really interested in these concrete expressions of art, right? You know, I don't really care for classical art, or like I said, I don't care about a statue, or from a Christian perspective, it could even be, maybe this is really truly idolatry. But the problem with that is it doesn't get around the what's going on when we live our lives and how focused we are on using the imagination, right? And so somebody might say, well, no, that's not true, right? I don't use the imagination all the time. But this is the case. Even when we talk about, you know, a classical way of thinking about humans is that they're rational creatures, right? They go about doing things in a particular way, and there's a certain logic or fittingness to all of that. But every occupation, every calling has to be somewhat imaginative. Even, you know, think down to a doctor or something, right? They learn a great deal about their practice and what they do, and what they should do. They understand a great deal about the body, and they're sort of told how to do this. But a lot of times great breakthroughs in medicine come from the application of the imagination, thinking ahead, thinking creatively, imagining something, trying it. To be sure, there's dangers to that, and we could all list those. But the idea that we don't, actually use our imagination to some degree, or think creatively or artistically, really at a lot of points of our life, is not true. And if you push it a little bit further, we know this. Think about the great thing of how much culture actually influences our views of things, right? People will change their whole view by reading a book or watching a TV show, or I think social media shows this to us to a great extent, how people are cultivating stories and thinking about who they want to be and how they want to live, and they get this from other stories, and it's this huge complex process of the imagination, right? And it's certainly dangerous. We can all as Christians list the dangers of social media, or the dangers of really any kind of art form, high or lower, popular or what have you. But the thing is we're all doing it. So what do we do about that, right? How does the church respond to that? And so, to get around to saying the response to that is, well, the first thing is we just have to actually realize that that's what's going on. And then think about, wait a second, maybe theology is also engaged in that, in the best sense of that. When we talk about things, when we imagine things from the perspective of the faith, when we create things, when we do things in service of the church, we realize that we're doing this as a response to God's call to us. And because we recognize we're doing that and trying to be faithful, that then gives us something to think about how we then respond to how other people are thinking and imagining their lives. And we start to realize that actually, you know, the world that we live in isn't necessarily mechanical, right? Isn't necessarily, you can't find a book that's going to tell you exactly how to go about doing X, Y, or Z. But rather that the great positive of that is that things like art or beauty or imagination give us inspiration in life, right? In the same way we might talk about love, but they're also quite dangerous. And the good thing about the gospel is the gospel gets right to the heart of that, right? The gospel gets right to the heart of what is sin? What are our desires? How do we orient our lives? And the answer to that is also, in some sense, you could say, an aesthetic or artistic response, right? What we see is the crucified Christ who shows us what this world is like, and we respond to it. But then we also have the glory of the resurrection, which shows us a way forward, right? And what I'm all doing here, if you even think of the language I'm using, it's aesthetic language. We're talking about showing or understanding, and it's beyond just simple kind of mechanical knowledge. So after that bit of a ramble, to get back to kind of the point of what you'd asked me in this question is I think the first thing I'd say is yeah, that art is dangerous, but that's a good thing because it's fundamental to who we are. And the church, when we talk about the gospel and we talk about how people live their lives, always gets down to the fundamental things, always gets down to the uncomfortable things, always gets down to the dangerous things, because we're actually talking about life and death here, right?
And you talked about the story or the imagination or those sorts of things. And you talked about the cross. You talked about the resurrection. So what is the link, I suppose, between purely imagination or imaginational and reality? Because a lot of people will say, oh, the resurrection, well, that is just somebody's imagination running wild. That's a myth in the imaginary sense. So, I mean, how does this imagination or this artistic beauty fit in with reality? Is that just an imagination like a Disney cartoon, or how does it actually hit with reality?
I think what we can do in getting into this tricky topic about the imagination is, like I said, do one other kind of move, which is to say, okay, fine, if you want to call the resurrection simply imagination, as in it's made up, that's not really what we know is going on with the imagination to some degree. And so what I mean by that is whenever anybody's really engaging in like artistic behavior, or sorry, not artistic behavior, but engaging in the arts or something like that, they're always working with something that already slightly exists, right? So if they're composing a song, there's a great heritage of music that's coming before them, right? Or if they're writing a story, they're aware of what's been written. They're aware of what other fiction exists. this, or, you know, what other great poems exist, and they're either staying in that style and doing something with it, or they're rejecting it, or they're responding to it, right? But the idea that anything really comes out of nowhere isn't true when we think about art or imagination. And so, in the same way, if you want to say, okay, well, yeah, the cross was just some kind of made-up story, well, that's not true. We can easily, you know, show that that's not true on a historical level, right? Christians can say, look at the record, and we can do a lot of good scholarly work to point out that there's no reason to question the historicity of the cross. But where the topic of imagination comes helpful is, okay, well, you know, the person might then say, so what? So what about the fact that this Jesus Christ person died, you know, 2,000 years ago, and he believed these things about why he died, and his followers believed these things about why he died, right? And they're happy to recognize the textual and the historical witness to that, but they keep, like I said, asking this so-called question. And this is, I think, once again, where art as a sort of apologetic, or imagination as apologetic, gets us into pushing that question, say, well, why would you not want to at least think about this, right? If it's true that you can't come up with a historical argument to say that, you know, the death and resurrection of Jesus didn't happen, okay, so it did happen, right? Now, what does that mean? Why do these people believe these things? Why did they give up their lives for this story? Why did this story become the story for them, right? And what's behind this is the persuasiveness of this sort of thing, which is the same thing that's going on a lot of time in the imagination or in art, is that we're trying to communicate, but we're trying to communicate in such a way that's persuasive because we actually believe this, right? And so, thinking about it, I think, in those terms helps us reframe how we're speaking to people about the faith if they don't want to believe the faith, to ask them to consider, why is it that we're so persuaded by all of this? Why are we willing to live like this, right? And part of that is because, as Lutherans, we have a good question of saying, because this is external to us. Something is calling us to this, right? You know, we understand this is the call of the gospel, the call of the Holy Spirit to faith, right? But to understand that if that's the case for us, maybe you should reevaluate your life. What are all these things that are calling you, are distracting your attention, that you put all of your maybe hope or identity in? And, you know, is to turn the question back to them now, is this just simply your imagination? Where are you pulling this from? Why are you living this kind of life? So, I think the way of thinking about this is that it's a kind of, it's very much rhetorical. It's a style. That's kind of what art is doing. It's not going to tell us, here's the right answer or the wrong answer, but it tells us about how we kind of operate. And if we can think about how we operate, it can be very helpful in how we approach people.
And earlier you mentioned that you think Lutheran theology gives us a particularly good way of answering these questions that people might have about imagination. You've just mentioned one, the external call, the externos. It comes from outside ourselves through the gospel, through the call of the Holy Spirit. Are there any other sort of Lutheran bits of theology that help us in that area?
Yeah. So I think altogether, we've got a good tradition of what we sometimes call like social doctrine, as in, How's the world work as God's operating and working in it? And in this sense, we're thinking a lot about creation, because we can talk about how God is bringing people to faith, and that is through, you know, the preaching of the gospel, right? But how's God still preserve this world? Because we Christians can look around and go, well, there's lots of other things going on that aren't necessarily the preaching of the gospel, right? And it seems to be that God is somehow sustaining this. And Lutheran theology is, I think, good at pointing out that the purpose of God sustaining the creation, right, preserving it, is for the purposes of the gospel, right? It's a sort of preparation for that. And so, then, in sort of Lutheran social doctrine or teaching or thinking, we often classically think about these through the doctrine of vocation, right? And we also probably think about this through what's sometimes called the created orders or the estates. These are historically, these estates or these created orders are ways of talking about, once again, how God sustains creation. And so the three kind of classical ones are, there's the church, right? So the order of the church, there's the order of the family or the household or the economic order, and then there's the sort of order of the state. And these are there's a lot of kind of, you know, interpretation of how they precisely work, but they're frames for thinking, like I said once again, about how God is preserving creation. Now, in those kind of orders, there's different vocations, or there's different stations, right? People live their lives according to that, right? You know, you can have the vocation of a parent, and you can also have the vocation of a teacher, and so forth, right? But they fall into different categories. Now, what vocation in the Lutheran tradition does is to say that actually this is a divine work. This is a good work, right? We can, you know, think about vocation prior to the Reformation, and there's a lot of fuzziness, almost to the point of saying actually these earthly things like parenthood, right, aren't that good, right? What's better is a life of contemplation in a particular churchly community. That's the better vocation, or the priestly vocation. But Luther points out, and this is from a strong reading of Genesis, that just simply doesn't hold, right? When we look at the Old Testament, we can see that God is calling people to this activity all the time in this kind of lively way, such that kingdoms come and go, that families are preserved, right? And that life itself is preserved in creation, and that it's very hard to simply just talk about creation as it happened and as creation as it's still happening, because it's a sort of, we have to be careful here, but it is a kind of continuous creation. God is upholding, sustaining creation through creation itself, through us, right? Okay. So if that's the case, that God is doing this, is calling people to this action, right? What does that then mean about, say, what we might call culture? What is God at work with in culture? Is it the case that all these kind of artists who are up to X, Y, or Z are just living a completely, you know, delusional life? Or if we take seriously the kind of Lutheran idea that God is at work in this creation, is God doing something with these artists and trying to maybe, you know, as a mask, if you will, we use that sort of language in Lutheran theology, the masks of God, is he trying to draw something out from them that we might hear it, and hear it in such a way that we would present the gospel clearer or in a particular way to them, right? So when, you know, we can say Jesus Christ died for your sins, and that is true. But I think we all know that when we present the gospel, we always present it specifically to people in the places where they're at and so forth. So what I'm getting at here is that there's all these callings, and this is this kind of comprehensive network about how God sustains creation for the purposes of the gospel. What then can we say about artists, and what then can we say about how the church interacts with them? Because in the kind of classical way of thinking about this, we can all say why a doctor is an important thing about sustaining creation, right? Doctors serve people in a particular way. They serve their neighbors. And that's a particular kind of love, right? And Luther and the Lutheran tradition is happy to say, we don't necessarily need to speak about a Christian doctor or not a Christian doctor. Doctors are serving people in a particular way. Or we can think about statesmen like this, right? That God, not only allows, but, you know, gives authority to governments to do particular work to sustain and preserve creation and so forth, right? So those are pretty easy, and we can go to the biblical passages for that, say Romans, for instance, or even what Christ says in the Gospels about honoring Caesar in the appropriate way. And we can see how families sustain and preserve. But what do we do about culture, right? What do we do about our day-to-day life, the way we think, our habits, our practices, and a lot of those that I've been saying earlier, I think are intimately bound up in sort of the imagination or artistic or creative thinking. So what do we do about those? And where does that fit? Does it fit under the household in the sense that, like, culture is just kind of an extension of the family, or is culture an extension of government or so forth? Well, anyway, in my research, Luther is kind of tracing how these orders work in Genesis, and he essentially gets down to the recognition that these orders come about, as I've been saying, for the preservation and flourishing of creation, even after the fall. But he gets at it in such a way that he's talking about how God is still addressing creation, right? Is through creation still calling things forward, things into existence. He's got this kind of lovely phrase about how we're all, and this is even after the fall, how we're all his sort of vocabulary, right? If his word is really a speech act, right, and he's bringing these things in, that this is God at work in creation. And not just if we think about creation as it happened before, but in the sustaining and the preservation of creation. So if that's the case, we can ask ourselves, what is it that artists once again are up to? And I think in a general answer, we can come back to this in a bit, is they're observing, they're seeing, they're communicating things about the world And they have a particular gift to do that. That's why we're often so moved by artists, right? That's why we're so moved by a novel or a piece of music, because it strikes us in such a way as they had some kind of access to something. They saw something, good or bad or whatever it was, that really struck us, and we go, wow, that changes us, right? Makes us rethink something. And so if that's the case, then what's helpful for the church in the proclamation of the gospel is to see, what is it that they see in the world? What is it that they're concerned about? What is it that they think we're not seeing or not hearing or not understanding? And if that's the case, if we listen to them, critically, of course, right, but listen to them, then is our preaching, our proclamation of the gospel going to shift, not in the sense of shifting the truth, but shifting in how we apply the gospel, how we say, yes, actually, Jesus Christ is the answer to these concerns you might see in the world, right? He is the answer to what you think might be beautiful, or is the answer to what you might think is ugly, right? Because, you know, if we're to go back to that question about beauty, you know, most philosophers of the ages realize that, you know, there's a certain pain or sadness that comes with beautiful things. And I think we've all experience that, right? You hear something very beautiful, a piece of music, and once it ends, you recognize, well, it ends. It's done. And you're kind of sad about that, right? Or if you've ever read a very good novel that's changed you, there's a certain kind of sadness that comes after it, not because of the novel itself, but because it's no longer there, right? And that's the general just recognition of the fall, of that creation comes to an end, that death is always lurking around behind us, right? And that the answer, you know, this is what we understand in the gospel, the answer to that is that, no, actually, maybe it isn't the end, right? That all these ends and limitations and all this death in this world isn't the end, right? That God has actually given himself over into death so that it doesn't have to be the end, and has even more so promised us a new creation. So what I'm getting at here, this very long explanation, is a way of thinking about how the vocations interact with one another. And if our vocation in the church is to proclaim the gospel, what might it also look like for us to listen to others who have this kind of artistic vocation or calling to tell us about what they see in the world and how we might respond to that?
Pastor Bella's back. Unfortunately, as you were talking about all things must end, sadly, our time has come to an end. But I'd like to invite you and our listeners back next week as we carry on this conversation about theology and beauty.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.